This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. White House says that a new round of talks aimed at halting the Israel-Hamas war has resumed in Doha and is expected to run into Friday. Talks also focus on securing the release of scores of hostages, with a potential deal seen as the best hope of heading off an even larger regional conflict. The United States, Qatar, and Egypt were to meet with an Israeli delegation in Qatar as the Palestinian death toll from the 10-month-old war surpassed 40,000. A Palestinian official said Hamas would not take part in Thursday's talks, but that its senior officials who reside in Qatar were ready to discuss any proposals from the mediators as they have in past rounds. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says that his country's troops have taken full control of Sitsa. It's the largest Russian town to fall to Ukraine's forces since the start of their cross-border incursion more than a week ago. President Zelensky's claim on Thursday could not be independently verified. He says Ukraine's military is setting up a command office there, which suggests that Ukraine might remain in the Kursk region long-term or just signal Moscow that it may intend to. Sitsa had a pre-war population of around 5,000 and is the administrative center for the border area of Russia's Kursk region. Meanwhile, in the eastern Ukrainian city of Pokrovsk, officials warn civilians to evacuate ahead of rapidly advancing Russian troops. Venezuela's opposition has been dealt a blow as countries that had been pressuring President Nicolas Maduro to release vote tallies began backing his claim to victory in last month's presidential election are now suggesting the possibility of repeating that contest. Proposal from the leftist governments of Colombia and Brazil came Thursday, less than 3 weeks after the results of the highly anticipated election came into question. This is VOA News. As students return to college campuses across the United States, administrators are bracing for a resurgence in activism against the war in Gaza. In some cases, they're imposing new rules to try to limit the protest. While the summer break has provided a respite in student demonstrations against the Israel-Hamas war, it has also given protesters and higher education officials a chance to regroup and strategize for the fall semester. Stakes remain high. Columbia University, for example, in New York, is considered ground zero for the protests, and the president resigned Wednesday after coming under heavy scrutiny for the way she handled them. A reputed Peruvian gang leader suspected in nearly two dozen killings in his home country has been arrested in New York by U.S. immigration authorities. U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement said that Gianfranco Torres Navarro was arrested in New York. He is being held at a federal detention facility near Buffalo pending an immigration hearing. Torres Navarro is the leader of Los Killers, who is wanted for 23 killings in Peru. The agency known as ICE says it moved to arrest Torres Navarro after receiving information on July 8th that he was wanted in Peru. TikTok has pushed back on arguments that the popular social media platform is not shielded by the U.S.'s First Amendment. The U.S. Justice Department had said in the legal brief submitted last month that the TikTok owner, China-based ByteDance, as well as the platform's global and U.S. arms, were not entitled to First Amendment protections. The argument was made in a case between the U.S. and TikTok over the federal law that could lead to a ban on the popular app. TikTok attorneys argue in a court document that the platform's U.S. arm does not forfeit its constitutional rights because it is owned by a foreign entity. They drew a parallel between TikTok and well-known news outlets like Politico and Business Insider, which are owned by a German publisher. The Taliban have deliberately deprived at least 1.4 million Afghan girls of schooling through bans. That is according to new data released Thursday by UNESCO. Afghanistan is the only country in the world with bans on female secondary and higher education. The UN body said that the number of girls out of school because of the bans has increased 300,000 since its previous count in April of 2023. Access to primary education has also fallen since the Taliban took power in August of 2021. With 1.1 million fewer girls and boys attending school, according to the UNESCO data. Taliban did not respond to requests for comment. More at VOAnews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, August 16, and here are some of the stories we are following. The UN Human Rights Office calls for the release of Zimbabwe activists ahead of tomorrow Saturday's SADC summit.
We at the UN Human Rights Office are concerned by reports of arrests, harassment, and intimidation of human rights defenders and political activists in Zimbabwe. We call for the immediate release of all those arbitrarily detained and for protection of civic space.
The World Health Organization declares mpox a public health emergency of international concern. Liberian President Boakai announces the formation of a committee to reconstitute the leadership of the Office for a War and Economic Crimes Court. Tanzania's main opposition, Chadema Party, says it will sue some police officers for manhandling the party's leadership on Monday.
Never allow this act to happen again. We are going to sue them in their name, those who have been involved in their capacity as individuals, not as the police force in total.
And climate scientists are building artificial intelligence into traditional weather forecasting methods. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The United Nations Human Rights Office has joined calls for Zimbabwe's government to release more than 100 activists detained ahead of the coming Southern Africa Development Community SADC summit. Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, Zimbabwe, where opposition groups are welcoming the Human Rights Office call while the government digs in.
Speaking to VOA Thursday via WhatsApp from Nairobi, UN Human Rights Office spokesperson Saif Magango said his organization was monitoring the situation in Zimbabwe, where more than 100 activists have been detained ahead of the SADC summit this Saturday. Others are in hiding for fear of being arrested too.
We at the UN Human Rights Office are concerned by reports of arrests, harassment, and intimidation of human rights defenders and political activists in Zimbabwe in the lead-up to the SADC summit. We call for the immediate release of all those arbitrarily detained and for protection of civic space.
Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights says that since mid-June, there has been a wave of arrest of pro-democracy activists nationwide, with some in hiding. The government says they were arrested for planning to protest at this weekend's SADC summit, where 16 heads of state and government are expected in Harare. Kazembe Kazembe is Zimbabwe's Home Affairs Minister.
While the freedom of expression is a fundamental right, it is paramount to observe that the enjoyment of that freedom should not be at the expense of the freedom of your fellow citizens. Freedom of expression does not and cannot meet the right to remove a democratically elected government from office and to replace with people or a party elected by nobody. The opposition has never held any peaceful demonstrations. It displays priorities of sections of the opposition who are agitated to stir civil unrest at a time focus should be on hosting the summit. We've always witnessed the penchant to mobilize for demonstrations around regional and international events. This SADC summit was therefore not going to be an exception.
Promise Mkwananzi, the spokesman for Zimbabwe's main opposition party, the Citizens Coalition for Change, welcomed the statement by the UN Human Rights Office.
We welcome the statement by the United Nations as an indicator that the crisis in Zimbabwe has transcended the borders of Zimbabwe, of SADC, and of the continent. And indeed, it is the prerogative of the international institutions like the UN to hold Zimbabwe to account and to call for the halt of harassment and arrest of activists in Zimbabwe. We welcome the statement indeed. We ratify the statement. And indeed, it is true. Zimbabwe must release all political prisoners, and SADC must not be party to the persecution of Zimbabweans for the sake of hosting this summit.
Alexander Lucero, a professor of politics at Africa University in Zimbabwe, has advised for both the ruling ZANU-PF party and civic society groups.
Civic society organizations, they also ought to change their game, in as much as confronting ZANU-PF is concerned. And on the other hand, ZANU-PF should also realize that confrontation with civil society, at the end of the day, the civil society, they have nothing to lose, but ZANU-PF, they have a country to run. Now we have a SADC summit, and it does not give a good picture to have the state always at loggerheads with certain protagonists in the opposition and in the civil society.
At the summit Saturday, Zimbabwe will assume SADC's chairmanship for the first time since the 16-nation bloc became a development community in 1992. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare.
Tanzania's main opposition Chadema party says it will sue some members of the police because of the way they manhandled the party's leadership on Monday. Police arrested, beat and jailed Chadema national chairman Freeman Mbowe, deputy chairman Tundu Lissu, and many others while on their way to the World Youth Day celebrations. The police banned the gathering because it had the potential to incite violence. John Nreman is the Chadema's Director of Protocol, Communications and Foreign Affairs. He tells me that the action by some senior police officials violated the legal and constitutional rights of the Chadema members.
Instructed our lawyers to sue them as soon as possible because we should never allow this act to happen again. And we are going to sue them in their names, those who have been involved in their capacity as individuals, not as the police force in total. And we are going to sue one commissioner of police in the name of Awadhi Juma Haji, commissioner of police for training and operations. And also we are going to sue the deputy registrar of political parties, Sisti Nyahoza, because he was the one who instructed the police to ban our symposium in Mbeya, while the law doesn't recognize him as an individual who is responsible to issue such instructions. Because even if there was anything wrong going on, it is the responsibility of the police in that particular area, according to the Police Act. He's the one she's the one entitled to do such a thing, and not the operation commander and not the deputy registrar of the political party. So we've decided that for once we are going to hold them accountable in the courts of law.
Why not sue the entire police department? Because the individuals you are suing were acting on behalf of the police department.
The reports we have up to the moment we made that decision was that even the whole police force was not involved, was not informed until after this particular police officer decided to take action. So that's why we've decided to do that. And also, even when we were in Mbeya, after the regional police commander of Mbeya region, he was at the scene, but he was against the use of excessive force which was being used by this particular commissioner of police. So that's why we've decided we should sue him in his personal capacity, because he was not acting on behalf of the police force. And that's why an IGP, Inspector General of Police of this country, has never spoken a word to the moment. And this is another sign that the police force as a whole was not involved.
In the meantime, are all your leaders that were arrested being accounted for? Have they all been released?
All of our leaders and our supporters and our youth, total of 520 now, the police have confirmed that number, all have been released unconditionally. But some were asked to report in the police stations tomorrow, but we have decided that we are not going to report to the police station because there is nothing wrong they have done. So tomorrow nobody is going to report.
John Mrema is the Director of Communication, Foreign Affairs and Protocols for Tanzania's main opposition Chadema Party. He was speaking to me from Dar es Salaam. Liberian President Joseph Boakai has announced the formation of a committee to reconstitute the leadership of the Office of the War and Economic Crimes Court in Liberia. Earlier this year, the president appointed Jonathan Masekwai to lead the office, but Masekwai was criticized heavily by civil society and human rights groups for lacking the credentials to lead the office and for once serving as a lawyer for some alleged Liberian warlords. Massa Washington is a former member of the Liberia Truth and Reconciliation Commission, the TRC. She tells me that President Boakai did the right thing by forming a committee to appoint new leadership for the office.
I think it's fantastic news
President Joseph Boakai has made the right decision to reset the secretariat of the World Economic Crimes Court in terms of the staff. Oh, that's the right way to go. This transitional justice practice should be a transparent one. It should be a process that evolves a cross-section of represented by civil society, human rights groups, and, you know, just basically that committee, those persons or those groups that have been named to form a part of that committee, that's the way to go. I absolutely agree with that listing, and I really do want to congratulate President Boakai for listening to the Liberian people.
So what do you think went wrong if, as you said, he didn't know anything about transitional justice?
I was not talking about Councillor Jonathan Masekwa. I was just talking about the president that, you know, the president's expertise is not in transitional justice. But I think the president was, I wouldn't say maybe misled. Maybe he was just ill-advised. Maybe he didn't get the right advice concerning how to proceed with this transitional justice process, which is the establishing the War and Economic Crimes Court. So I think the president didn't get the proper information from the beginning. He didn't get the appropriate information. It was one of the reasons why people like me were opposed to it. Another cardinal reason we were opposed to Jonathan Masekwa is that he has zero clue about transitional justice. So maybe he's a good lawyer. I'm not questioning his legal acuity. No. What I'm saying is, when it comes to transitional justice, no, that is just not his area. So how are you going to take someone who is maybe a commercial lawyer or maybe a random lawyer, and you're going to put him over there to actually lead the process that will lead to the prosecution of perpetrators, alleged perpetrators who have done all sort of stuff to the Liberian people and who have evaded justice for so long? And also, this is a guy who has represented all, as we speak right now, he has clients who are actually on the other side. So you put him in a process that is human rights oriented, that is going to be talking about seeking justice for victims of the war. But then here he is. He's the lawyer or who is representing alleged perpetrators.
With this latest development, the actual establishment of this War and Economic Crimes Court, what does that mean?
Well, I would like to give the president or President Joseph Boakai, I'd like to give him the benefit of the doubt, because I think establishing the War Economic Crimes Court was one of agenda items that he campaigned on during the just ended election. And you saw immediately following the end of the election when he was declared the winner, you know, he said he was going to bring the War Economic Crimes Court. And, you know, he has done some things towards making sure that that promise to the Liberian people is delivered. So let's give him some credit, even though he made a mistake by the appointment of this Masekwa. But I would say it's because of maybe some of the people that he has around him. The president is not going to be everywhere all at once. This is why he will surround himself by people who are knowledgeable, expert areas, so that they can advise him correctly. And for some reason or another, this whole issue with the Secretariat of the World Economic Crimes Court establishment slipped through the cracks. But we say all's well that ends well. Now that the president, he listened to us and he's actually called for a reset, I would like to take it from here now. And let's see how all of us can be supportive of this committee.
Martha Washington is a former member of Liberia's Truth and Reconciliation Commission. She was speaking with us from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, August 16. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. The World Health Organization has declared mpox a public health emergency of international concern for the second time in 2 years following the outbreak of the viral infection in the Democratic Republic of Congo that has spread to neighboring countries. Sam Bolan is the acting incident manager at the WHO Regional Office for Africa. He tells viewers Lino Mondu that the startup aims to accelerate resource allocation and international cooperation to sort to contain the disease.
The declaration of a public health emergency of international concern that was made by Director General Tedros earlier this evening really serves as a call to action to the global community, which can have a lot of positive consequences for our ability to effectively respond to the crisis at hand. So in addition to all of the work that was already ongoing, what this means is that we can work with the international community to make sure that we have the resources available to respond. In addition to that, it means that, as we are already doing, we can work under what are called the international health regulations within the emergency response framework to really make sure that we're effectively coordinating the response. So we're going to be doubling down on our efforts, bringing in those additional resources, and making sure that we can bolster the work that we're already doing.
What are the recommendations to address mpox in general, particularly this new form of mpox that seems more virulent?
There actually is a treatment available, Tecovirimat, and the World Health Organization has been supporting countries in the African region, for example, South Africa, to be sure that they're able to access doses of this very novel therapeutic to be sure that people are able to get the clinical care that they need. And this is a very difficult process, and it's the same process that is true for vaccination, which is that really one of the barriers is a regulatory one. We have to work country by country to be sure that countries are able to import and then put to use something like the therapeutic that's available, or in the future, the vaccinations that we may be able to roll out. We have worked with, for example, the Democratic Republic of the Congo, with their national regulatory authorities and their Ministry of Health, to be able to bring vaccines and to come up with a vaccination plan that hopefully in quite the future, in the coming weeks or a couple of months, they'll be able to begin targeted vaccinations within the country. What we'll be doing in the meantime is working with risk communication, community engagement, and also that regulatory component that I already discussed, to be sure that once vaccines do become accessible, that we're in a position to hit the ground running and roll them out to the people that need them.
That was Sam Boland, Acting Incident Manager at WHO Regional Office for Africa. He was speaking from Congo's capital, Brazzaville, with my colleague, Lino Mondu. Torrential rains and severe flooding have impacted more than 700,000 people in Western Central Africa just 2 months into the rainy season, according to the UN. Earlier this year, heavy rains caused a devastating flood in East Africa. Now, climate scientists are building artificial intelligence, AI, into traditional weather forecasting. VOA's Douglas Mpuga reached climate scientist Abubakar Salid Babika at the World Meteorological Organization's Regional Office for Africa in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
AI is one of the rapidly growing field of science, and it has been currently used in different aspects of our life, from social media to user engagement to internet technology, and of course weather and climate forecasting. And this is one of the fields that benefited greatly from the technology and the science that is provided or offered by the AI field. So it is used, for example, to improve the traditional method of weather forecasting. This is the method that based on the physics, the models that based on the physical laws, have benefited from different improvement on those models, and also, for example, for identifying errors and the error buttons and corrections of bias. But there's also a direct benefit that we have seen now, a complete or standalone AI models that are used in weather forecasting. For example, the European Center for Medium Range Weather Forecast uses now currently about 4 to 5 AI models, and they publish in operational mode. They run them in operational modes, and they share the result for comparison. So the result is open source, and those models are also open source. In Africa, it started gradually. I am aware that the IGAD Climate Prediction and Application Center, based in Nairobi, also started a project in collaboration with University of Oxford to use AI technology and method in improving seasonal forecasting. So, and we in general, in the weather and climate community, are one community, and the development that happen also in other regions, Africa, will benefit from. So,
How reliable is artificial intelligence And how will it change weather forecasting and early warning systems in Africa?
The AI models are gradually proving themselves, and they are showing good results. So, for example, based on the director of forecast at the ECMWF, Florian Palmberger, that AI-based weather forecasting models is quite good, and to high extent is comparable to the traditional forecasting models.
Abubakar Saleh Babika is a climate scientist at the World Meteorological Organization Regional Office for Africa. He spoke from Addis Ababa with my colleague Douglas Mpuga. It is time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sport in Kenya, where medalists from the 2024 Olympic Games were honored by President William Ruto on Thursday at the Eldoret State Lodge in Usingushi County. The athletes, who were hosted for a breakfast meeting, were celebrated for their exploits at the Games, where Kenya won 11 medals. The gold medalists received over $23,000, the silver medalist over $15,000, and the bronze medalist $7,700 each. According to the president, the scheme was introduced to motivate the athletes and reward them for their hard work.
It is not always that you become number one in Africa. It is not always that you become number two globally in athletics. It is a major feat. Even as we criticize ourselves, we must remember to celebrate our success.
In football news, Zimbabwe's Herrieta Queens and Zambia's Green Buffaloes got off to a positive start on day one of the CAF Women's Champions League COSAFA qualifiers in Malawi on Thursday. Blantyre's Imperial Stadium played host to the opening afternoon of the qualifiers, where Herrieta Queens comfortably overcame Namibia's FC Ongos, who were making their debut in the tournament with a comfortable 3-1 win. Another debutant in South Africa's University of Western Cape lost 1-0 to former champions Green Buffaloes. The overall winner of the 10-day tournament will book a place at the CAF Women's Champions League finals, joining current African champions Mamelodi Sundowns Ladies of South Africa. Staying with football news, Tottenham midfielder Wes Bissouma has been suspended by the club for one match after footage emerged of him on social media appearing to inhale laughing gas. The 27-year-old Malian international posted a video of himself inhaling from a balloon on Saturday, but he later apologized for his actions and said it was a severe lack of judgment. Speaking in his Thursday's news conference, manager Ange Postecoglou said Bissouma was suspended for their Premier League opener at Leicester City on Monday.
He's made a really poor decision, and you want to understand that, and you want to try and help him through that. And as a club, you know, what we can do to make sure he doesn't make those kind of choices and decisions in the future.
And now to mixed martial art, where former two-time UFC middleweight champion Nigeria-New Zealander Israel Adesanya will face current champions Dricus du Plessis in their title fight at the UFC 305 in Perth on Saturday. The fight will determine who walks away with the coveted middleweight title. Adesanya, who has lost two of his last three fights, is seeking to reclaim the middleweight title he lost to Sean Strickland in a shocking upset last year. And that's it for this Friday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a nice weekend. And that's it for this Friday, August 16th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending your week with us. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I am James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a great weekend. We'll see you again on Monday morning.